Your first rainbow drop?
Welcome to the Negative World Podcast, a podcast from the Negative World community where Nintendo nerds discuss video games, or video game nerds discuss Nintendo, I'm not sure which. We are recording this on January, Friday the 13th, 2012. And if all goes well, this is going to be the 25th episode, and I am the host, Guillaume, and with me today I have...
It's Plute, or you can call me Paul.
And Jamie, also known as Poke Squadron.
So today we're going to be, after the What Are We Playing segment, what are you guys going to talk about?
Well, after the Now Playing, I'm going to talk about the importance, or maybe not so much importance, of the length of games nowadays. And Jamie, what are you talking about?
Well, as this is our 25th episode, we got another 25 coming up, as it is Mega Man's 25th anniversary. So I want to talk a little bit about, you know, where he's at now and what's going to be happening in the next year and beyond for the Blue Bomber.
As for my own topic, Nintendo has decided to start doing paid DLC. They're going to start with Fire Emblem, and I'm wondering what that means for our favorite Nintendo franchises. Are we for or against? And what do you think about these special editions that include the DLC that come out like 6 months to a year later? One of those was Limbo. Just real quick, like first I didn't finish the game yet, so and again that's gonna come back to Paul's topic later. Like the atmosphere of the game has not been overrated, let me tell you that. Like the black and white visuals are very good at creating a very, well, dark mood.
Well, I think for me, like, it makes it really creepy, but at the same time it makes the game really unpredictable. Like, you basically anything in the background can move at any time, so it really keeps you on your toes as to, you know, is that thing going to come out and stab me, or, you know, is this going to break underneath my footing, or anything like that. So,
do you like that unpredictability, though?
I do. I like it a lot.
I liked it a lot because of the length of the game. And it kept me on my toes.
And the checkpoints are pretty forgiving.
I suppose so, but I don't know, it's a little bit weird to have a game that rewards you for dying over and over again. I say reward because, like, there's basically no real way that, unless you're really, really being careful, mm-hmm. and perhaps, like, maybe if you've seen someone go through the game before, you can make your way through this game without dying, but usually, you're going to find out where the puzzles are by, you know, running right into the traps and dying in a very gruesome way.
Well, I always felt that the spacing between the big set pieces was pretty substantial, and sometimes a little too much. And then once I actually saw something that looked a little different, I went, okay, let's slow down here and think about what's about to happen.
And did you usually succeed, or...?
After a couple of deaths.
And I guess another point that I had on the boards and that you guys disagreed with was that I was relieved when in Rayman, when you died, you just popped like a balloon, because it seems to me that in indie 2D downloadable platforming games these days, there is a lot of needless blood or a lot of gore, or it's just gruesome, you know. And Limbo is about this, you're playing as this little kid who's, in a very dangerous world, obviously, and he dies over and over again. I'm just not sure if I appreciate the how graphic the deaths are. It seems to me a little bit, I don't know how to say this, not crass, but it makes me a little uncomfortable when I see a little guy's head just like being cut off his body, you know, and like the blood spurting.
I do understand what you're saying about downloadable or indie games, how, you know, they toss the violence in there because they can do it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I will agree, in general, I mean, the violence is a little too much. Not in this game, but I'm going to go back a little bit, or forward, to Abobo's Big Adventure, that NES-style thing, which was really fun. I'm not done it yet. I'm on the balloon fight level.
Right.
For people who don't understand what that is, Abobo's Big Adventure is a Flash-style game, and you can find it online, and it is the ultimate worship to the NES era. And a few people on Negative World's issue with it is suddenly there's some crass moments in it, and I actually feel that those moments are a little too crass, and I agree. Like, there's one point where Abobo, you know, can kill, spoiler alert, Princess Zelda or Toad, and, you know, there's blood right. flying everywhere. That's a little too much, because there's no reason for that, especially since back in the day when we played the NES, that didn't happen. And maybe that's their point. You know, it didn't happen, so we can finally do it. We can finally, I don't know, kill that dog in Duck Hunt, which might happen. I don't know. I haven't gotten far enough in the game. But in Limbo, my thing was, once I beat the game, and I beat it in one sitting, I went, oh my goodness, what was that all about? Why was this kid doing this? And I'm big into trying to figure that stuff out. Once I finish a game, I like to hop online and look at, you know, miles and miles worth of text about people trying to figure out, you know, what the game was about. And considering what, you know, a lot of people figure the game's about and what I figured the game was about, the violence kind of worked in that game. And that's how I feel.
No, it's probably fair enough. And I still am not done with the game, so I will keep an open mind for the rest of the game. It's just a little... I don't know. Maybe I'm just a wuss.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I don't think it would have been too hard for them to, like, toggle that, like, just as a menu option. So maybe when you die, the screen just blacks out or something like that. Because nothing will be grosser than your imagination. So
that's true. And I mean, I think back to Kill Bill. Who's seen Kill Bill?
Have you guys seen it? I've seen both of them.
All right. Yep. So, you know, the whole part where in the first part, part one, when she's, you know, slicing everyone up in the club,
mm-hmm.
how it goes black and white, and she's slicing them up. The only reason I heard that it went black and white was to keep the rating.
Really?
And in a way, Limbo kind of works that way too. If it's in black and white, you don't see red blood spewed everywhere, and, you know, bile in its proper color just flying at your face. It's
yeah,
all
that's
in black
fair
and
enough.
White, right?
Yeah.
So I feel that the style that they used kind of, it brings it down a little bit. And I've played some indie games where, you know, they try to go for the gross factor, and I kind of wish that I didn't give them my 99 cents or $5 or whatever I gave them. What I was trying to get at was, we're saying there could have been a toggle, but sometimes, and I'm not going to lie to you, sometimes the people who are designing these games feel themselves as artists. You know, if this is the director's vision, why screw with it? You know what I mean?
I was going to say, I didn't think it would take away that much, because the rest of the level design and the puzzle design is pretty stellar.
No, it's good. It's good. I definitely enjoy the fact that the puzzles aren't always stuff that I've already seen before in other games. So it's got that going for it, definitely.
That's right. It does end on sort of a story note, and I know that they left the story up for interpretation. I do advise anyone who finishes it just to look up at least a couple of conversations onto what happened in that story. And that's all I'm going to say.
So, yeah, so we ended up talking about Limbo a little bit more than I thought we would. I'll get off my soapbox about 2D indie violence here. And I'm going to talk a little bit about Mighty Switch Force. It's a WayForward game. It's about like the 50th WayForward game I talk about on this podcast. well, not really, but close.
That's not enough.
Yeah. And the Mighty Switch series or Mighty Flip series, or, well, just a Mighty series, has been very hit and miss for me. Like, they have been, it's the first one that's made for the 3DS, specifically for the eShop. And there have been a couple of games on DSiWare, and I'm not a big fan of them. Mighty Flip Champs is this weird puzzle game where you basically have different configurations of a level, and you can switch between them, like, to as much as like 7 different configurations of platforms, and your character can't jump, but you have ladders and stuff, but the ladder to where you want to go might be on like the fifth configuration, so you have to basically memorize different level layouts so that you can reach different doodads and then reach the exit. It's really, I don't think my brain is configured to really be good at that game, so that's probably why I don't like it.
So is it kind of like A Boy and His Blob, the new one, but without the awesomeness of the blob being there? Except, the entire environment changes instead?
No, it's, I guess it's pretty hard to explain. It's basically different platforms, and not all the platforms are there. So you have to switch between different worlds or different configurations, or just to be able to get where you want to go.
Is it kind of like in Mega Man when they have the blocks that disappear and there's
almost almost, except that in certain stages, like the stage is going to change automatically on you, but most of the time you can flip yourself between the stages. It's just you have to memorize basically the layouts and so I wasn't even trying to talk about Mighty Flip Champs at first. Basically, the point is that Mighty Switch Force is a much better game, in my opinion. It's still a puzzle game, but the action elements are a little bit more fleshed out, I would say. There are some similarities. You can switch between two different states, I suppose. There are elements in the background, different blocks that will form platforms that you can stand on when they're protruding, and you can make them recess in the background, and then you can walk through them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not terribly complicated, and you just have to, like, different colors of these blocks are going to be, you're going to be able to walk on them in one of the two different states. So basically, you know, you're going to jump on a platform, and you're going to jump to the next platform, but you're going to have to switch in midair, and you're going to land on the platform that you just made protrude. And the platform that you were on is going to recess. I don't know. Look at a video.
It's all level-based, or...
Yeah, no, it's long. The levels, well, I shouldn't say long. It's just that in Mighty Flip Champs, the levels were basically one screen big, and these are more... your traditional go anywhere kind of level, like kind of like Mega Man or something like that.
It scrolls in all directions, you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They do a surprising variety of things with this mechanic. And once you've solved the puzzles, once you've figured out, okay, so this is how I get all the doodads that I need and then get to the exit, you can then try to do to reach like the time target that they've set for you, the par time. And that's when you realize that that's when the game becomes fun as an action game, because then it's just a matter of having the right timing and not screwing up, and, you know, perfect jumps and perfect shooting and all of that good stuff. And it's not just like platforms that you make appear. Like, there's going to be kind of the equivalent of a Donkey Kong Country barrel, and basically you're going to have to switch at the right moment with the right timing so that you enter these barrels and you're shut out of them, and, you know, like, it goes super fast, and you have to be absolutely precise. Yeah, like, it's really the best way that I can describe it. Those Donkey Kong Country levels where you're being shut out of barrel after barrel. And I definitely recommend the game. It's very short. If you were to do all of the levels with the part time, like, it would be like a little bit over 7 minutes. There's 16 levels. But the thing is, like, you're not going to complete those levels perfectly the first time around. You're going to be repeating and repeating. It's kind of a shame, actually, that there's no time trials, or I
Is there like
mean,
a leaderboard or anything like that?
yeah, there's no leaderboards. I would have liked that because then I could have been competing with you guys, but no, unfortunately, you didn't do that. But you can still, I don't know, if you're so inclined, you can still try to best your score or something like that. But no, like for about like $6 or $7, I would say it's worth the money if you want an old school action game that's really like you can replay pretty often. You know, it's not gonna give you tons and tons of content the way Pushmo will. But whereas like Pushmo has a lot of unnecessary tutorials as we've discussed last time, and kind of waste your time by teaching you what a ladder is, this game is a little bit more takes for granted that you've actually seen a video game before, that you know what you're
You're
doing.
bringing your gamer knowledge to it.
Yep. All right, so who's next?
I'll go next. So I've been putting some time into Super Meat Boy, which I had heard really good things about, so I was really excited about playing it. I got to play it a while ago, but didn't get too into it, so I started playing it again, and I had a lot of fun with it towards the beginning. You know, it's very fast-paced, even though you die like 500 times every level. But you get into a groove with the game, and then I got like 4 or 5 worlds in, and I just started getting a little burnout with it. It's frustrating. It's really frustrating, especially if you ever want to try to venture off and get little secret levels and stuff like that. If I go back to it, I'm going to just skip any optional content and just try to beat the game.
I don't know, like some people really seem to dig the level design. I didn't get really that far into the game. I beat the first world and I just put it aside and didn't go back to it ever. But yeah, like for instance, like Simbabad is very, very has a lot of praise for the level design, and at some point I think he posted a video of a fan-made level where it just seemed so terribly punishing. But the thing, and he was just like, see, like this is the kind of bad amateurish level design that is not in Super Meat Boy usually. And I was looking at a video and I was, you know, I couldn't tell the difference. It looked like a regular Super Meat Boy level to me, and I.
Well, I think part of my problem was I started doing one of the warp zone levels, and I was doing like the same level for like a half an hour, it felt like, and then at that point I just got frustrated and I put the game down, and I think I'll probably go back to it at some point, but it's the kind of game that I can only play so much of at one time, because it's so fast paced. I mean, I had the same problem with like Call of Duty, where it's just constant shit being thrown at you. And, sometimes you just gotta take a break. It's like when Nintendo tells you to go take a break for a while. It's like I have to do that with Super Meat Boy.
I'll agree with that. My issue with the game itself, and I'm gonna tell you, I had a lot of fun with the first world, a lot of fun. But my issue with the game itself is Meat Boy kind of jumps in a floaty fashion. It's not what I'm used to. I'm used to Super Mario Brothers. I'm sorry. Mario is like my go-to guy all the time. And his physics changed. Mario's physics changed from game to game, but never to the point where it's floaty, where I never 100% feel like I have 100% control over Super Meat Boy. I jump to try to get to this tiny, tiny little platform that's between two saw blades, and there will be saw blades everywhere by the time you're done the game. Trust me, you'll see saw blades constantly. I try to jump and try to hit this tiny little platform, and I don't know if I'm going to get it because he's so floaty. It's not this generation's Super Mario Brothers, as a lot of places, as a lot of websites claimed it to be, or at least IGN did.
Yeah, what I don't understand with me is that I put 8 hours into BitTrip Runner. Maybe it's because I suck at it, but like that, I don't know what the difference is between those two games where I will play the same BitTrip Runner level for like an hour and I'll still be angry, but there's something burning inside of me that really wants to beat that whatever level because I keep getting like a little bit farther, and then a little bit farther, and then a little bit farther.
That game has also driven me almost to insanity. But the thing about BitTrip Runner is that you have the music, right? The music is cueing you when to jump, when to slide, when to whatever else that little guy does. Oh, I know what I need to do there. Just one more time.
Yeah.
And because also, like, do you think that the simplicity of the controls has something to do with it? Like, the music, sure, is a cue, but the fact that you don't have to mess with an analog stick.
Yeah. Oh, no, for
sure.
You're
reacting more than anything. You're just...
It's a rhythm game. It is.
It's hypnotic. It's hypnotic, really.
For sure.
And then I'll look away from the computer, and then the world in front of me is moving from left to right like some sort of weird optical illusion.
Anyway, I definitely enjoyed that game a little bit more than Super Meat Boy, so I agree with you there.
Yeah, it's just a little bit messy when in Super Meat Boy, not only you've got the analog stick that you have to apparently... Like, I can't commit that game to my muscle memory because it's just too... Like, there's too many variations. And not only that, but you have to take into account when you hold the run button, and that's going to determine how far you jump, but also when you're wall jumping, it's going to change, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit too...
You mean when you're wall floating? Because
yeah, sure.
Do you not feel that he's floaty?
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Okay.
But we do have Nintendo fans on the Negative World who absolutely love that game, so maybe it's just, you know, maybe the problem is us.
Truthfully, you know what? It might be. It truthfully
but
may
it,
be.
It, it probably get that it isn't.
I think it's a really good game. I think I need a break from it.
It's fair too enough. Punishing yeah. And floaty.
Yeah, we're all wusses.
Right after in the last podcast, I said I need a challenge in my games for them to feel worth playing.
we're talking to someone who's regularly... How many hours have you put into Pac-Man Championship?
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's get through Fluidity.
Yeah, I'll be really brief on Fluidity because I think you've talked about it before. I just started playing it a couple days ago, and it is getting better and better and better every time I play it. And I'm shocked. Like, I'm actually shocked by this game. Me and Dr. Finkelstein have been playing it like kind of at the same time. We're kind of at the same spot, and we're just kind of going back and forth. And like, dude, I just did this, and oh, I just did this, and it's like around every corner there's something new to do. It's the kind of game that I really wanted to be on WiiWare when it came out.
Yeah, no, I just want to quickly say that I reviewed the game on Negative World back when it originally came out, and I gave it a 10 out of 10. So you can imagine that I really like the game as well. And yeah, you're right, Jamie. When you like, there is so many new things to do all the time. Like, you never feel like you're just repeating puzzles, or it's never like an incremental change to a puzzle you've already seen. They always come up with new stuff. You think, well, there's only so much you can do, really, with water-based puzzles. But then, like, they keep giving you power-ups. They let you turn into a block of ice. And all of a sudden, the gameplay completely changes. And, like, the platforming becomes, like, this wall-clinging, acrobatic exercise. It's really... You would not believe when you start the game what you're going to be able to do at the end.
If you would have told me 5 days ago how much fun it would be to hop around as a block of ice, I would have told you you're crazy. But, my God, that's awesome.
I only played the first level, okay?
Right.
Right.
And this is coming from someone who is an avid user. Back in the day, I used to be an avid user of my PSP, and I played Loco Roco, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And when it first started, I went, okay, yeah, this is Loco Roco without the cute little yellow guys. That's great. Oh, look, a gear. I have to put that gear into the gear area. And as soon as that happened, and I mean, and I know I haven't even touched close to what this game is going to touch, but as soon as I saw that gear, I went, okay, this isn't Loco Roco at all. And I don't
no,
want
it's
people,
not.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want people who download it to go, oh, okay, yeah, you know, this is the poor man's Loco Roco. No, this is actually a better game. And this is what I'm getting just from the first level.
Yeah, like people see the superficial resemblance because you tilt the level to move around.
Exactly. And it's not the same game. And I saw the superficial resemblance as well, but luckily enough, Club Nintendo gave it away for free or for 150 coins. And I downloaded it and I finally played it, and I'm definitely going to play this one through. And trust me, right now, for me to play a game through is a lot.
I would go
So.
as far as to say it's maybe one of my top 10 or top 5
That's pretty
Wii
exciting
games.
because I still have, a million or however many levels left to do. I only did the first level. I actually can't wait to go back to it. And I'm in a little bit of a gaming lull right now, and I know everyone hits those every once in a while, and I actually want to go back to it. It's one of those games.
If I can add this in real quick, because it's funny you mentioned the PSP, but this is the kind of game I think would be really cool either as a sequel or re-release or whatever on 3DS, just because with the gyroscope on the 3DS, when when it's in your hand and you're actually tilting it, that I oh man.
This is a gyroscopic game, and I want to jump into some arguments right now about the way you jump.
Yeah.
I feel it's natural because you're controlling the way that the world is tilting. If you shake that world, what's going to happen? The water's going to fly up into the air. And for me, at least personally, and this is just from the first level, it felt very intuitive.
Yeah, I don't think the argument is that it doesn't feel natural. I think the argument is that it doesn't work 100% of the time. And I would say that's fair.
It never really bothered me, I got used to it, and I still love the game, so it was a non-factor for me.
All right, we love fluidity. Okay, so what have you been playing, Paul?
What have I been playing? Luckily enough, recently the new batch of games on Club Nintendo include Kirby's Dream Land, and that costs only 100 Nintendo coins. So I downloaded it, and this is a game I played back when I was a kid. My cousin used to have it on his old brick Game Boy, and I played through the entire thing again, and it was a lot of fun. But you know what? I didn't play through the entire thing. When you beat it the first time, you get an extra game mode, and in this extra game mode, which is quite brilliant, you get to play through the entire game all the way through again, which is only, I think, 5 levels, but that's okay. Because all of a sudden the enemies are smarter. Well, not really smarter, but they're a lot more aggressive. They'll dive at you, they'll kamikaze at you, they'll have extra attacks on you, and it becomes a really good game. So if you've only played through it, during the first quote unquote quest, try it in the extra hard mode, which if you want to, you press A up and select on the title screen, and that will give you a good amount of challenge. And this is back when Kirby didn't have his copy ability. It's back when all he could do was suck in his enemies and spit them back out. And at that point, you have to actually follow some great boss patterns to actually destroy them instead of just slashing at them with your sword. So yeah, that's Kirby's Dream Land for me.
Yeah, I just want to quickly mention that I reviewed that game, and it feels to me like a lot of Kirby games, it seems like their level design is made for the extra hard mode, and then they make the game easier and they call that the normal mode, because the level design really seems to make more sense when you're playing on hard mode. For instance, normally dying, like falling into a pit, isn't a problem in Kirby because you can usually hover, you can float. So, like, why is there even a pit there? But then you can play the game on hard mode, and the enemy is placed at just the right spot that you're going to be tempted to suck it in at this exact spot where you're not going to be able to spit it back out and then float your way to safety. You're just going to fall in the pit. And you're going to be like, "Oh, damn you developers, like you knew I would do this, you bastards."
That's right.
It's really, really clever.
They put a lot more of those little spiky guys in there.
Gordos,
Yeah.
yes, that's right, the
Gordos.
Gordos.
Yes.
Oh, I just want to touch upon that actually. Thanks for saying that. This game is actually, in a sense, if it was a little bit longer, speaking of which, it would be really challenging because those Gordos take off half your life. You touch a Gordo twice, you're dead.
Really?
Yeah, so it has its own challenge right there.
Yeah, so I think we all recommend the game. It's and like sure, it's short, but it's a so are iPhone games. I mean, but this is more, in my opinion, like it offers a little bit more than an iPhone game would. It's maybe like what, $4 or free if you manage to get it through Club Nintendo. But yeah, like it's good solid level design, good solid fun.
I agree.
Cool. Nintendo soon will release Fire Emblem in Japan. I hope it's going to come to the US, or North America, I should say. I'm Canadian. And, well, this game they've announced is going to have paid DLC, downloadable content, and no one knows what that entails. We've seen DLC in the past. I mean, several developers do it regularly. It's a wonder that Nintendo hasn't jumped in earlier. And sometimes it's worth it. They give you new levels, new units, new scenarios, and you can pay for them, or you don't have to if you don't want to. And sometimes it's not so good, like horse armor or something that I've heard a lot about. And yeah, so I'm kind of wondering, what do you guys think about the DLC? Like, have you ever purchased it? Have you ever felt that a game was insufficient, or that you wanted to play more of a game so much that, yeah, sure, I'll pay $15 for three new levels, even though the whole game had 20 levels and it was a better value proposition?
I've definitely purchased DLC, and I do have issue with a lot of types of DLC, and I have a feeling we're all going to say kind of the same thing about that. DLC I've purchased. One of the DLCs that I purchased that I'm not 100% happy that I purchased include was in Mega Man 9.
Yeah.
I downloaded Proto Man,
Yeah, me too.
which kind of had the controls of Mega Man 3 Mega Man style. And I enjoyed it. And I can't remember how much it was, but I was kind of upset that I actually paid like $2 or whatever
I
for
think it
it.
was two.
Yeah, and that's a little much to ask for. And we knew as soon as that Mega Man 9, as soon as Mega Man 9 was released, we knew that that was going to come because the store was already there with question marks all over it. Oh, we're going to ask you for some more money. What's it going to be for? That was a little much. But when it comes to Mega Man, I tend to, err on the side of not caution. And I ended up purchasing everything, at least for Mega Man 9. For Mega Man 10, I didn't, but for 9, I like went nuts because it's been a while. At least at the time, it was a while since we got a Mega Man like that.
And did you play through the game like every time? Like, did you play through the game and then, oh, okay, I'm gonna buy Proto Man and then play through the game with him and then.
Ha. See, that's my issue. I played through the game with Mega Man, and I enjoyed it a lot. And some of the music is actually really, really good, like compared to all the older Mega Mans or Mega Men.
Check
Mega.
all of the music is really good.
It's very fantastic, and I feel that Mega Man 9 is actually a stronger game than Mega Man 10. But that's a completely different topic. Once I got Proto Man, I had played through the level so many times that I didn't beat it with Proto Man. And I was actually upset that I actually spent money on it because I never went around to actually finishing it up.
But you still bought the rest of the DLC for some
Oh, I
reason.
bought it all because there was, I can't remember exactly what there was, but who can chime in and tell me what there was to download? Was
Like
base in
some
the
sort of
game
challenge
or was
room,
base
or
in
yeah,
Mega
there was.
10?
Oh, Mega Man 9.
Okay.
There was a challenge room, and that was fun. I enjoyed that. But once again, that was something that was withheld. That wasn't worth paying extra for.
Well, it's hard with the Wii because you'd have to use your you had to use your Wii points on that, right?
Wii points aren't hard to use.
Well, I'm just
stop being a baby.
Here you go. Okay. Well, you either A, you're like, oh, well, I have 200 points left because they made me buy more points than I needed, so I might as well buy Proto Man.
Yeah, Nintendo doesn't do that anymore. Finally,
thank
so.
God.
I don't know. I feel perhaps we should have done Plut's topic first, Paul's topic first, because my opinion about DLC kind of ties with my opinion of long games in general. I would say it's very, very rare that I play a game and I really desperately want to play more of it by the end. Even if it's a short game, I am going to, as long as like the work seems complete, as long as there's not some sort of cliffhanger or, you know, like sometimes you feel shortchanged when you've bought a game and it just seems to end without really ending. And as long as that doesn't happen, I'm probably going to have had my fill by the time I finish it. And then if you offer me extra content, I'm probably going to be thinking, well, you know what? I could probably buy a new game and have some new experiences and forget about this. This happened with Assassin's Creed 2, where by the end of it, I was kind of tired of the game anyway. And then this is a situation where we know for a fact that chapters were withheld because they couldn't complete them before the shipping date for the game. So they took out these chunks of the story that apparently weren't that vital to the overall plot. And so they withheld that and they worked on it as DLC instead to be released later. And sure, like there were like some sort of like gaping holes in the game when you played it, but it was kind of explained in game, you know, like the I don't want to go into an explanation of what that story, that game's story is, but you know, they managed to make it make sense that there would be gaps. And then it turns out, like I didn't download the DLC, but I read the reviews, and it turns out that it was just basically filler. Like you didn't need it to understand more of the story. It didn't really bring anything new. And right, okay. So I don't know about you guys, but do you watch sometimes deleted scenes on DVDs?
Right, it depends on how close it is to my heart.
Have you ever really like watched those and thought, "Wow, I really wish they hadn't cut that"? Because that, I gotta say, in my experience, it doesn't happen very often.
No, usually they feel like, "Oh, well, no wonder they left this out of the movie."
You think, well, yeah, that would have destroyed the pacing. Thank God we dodged a bullet there. To me, that's kind of how it feels like you pay for the downloadable content, and then you realize, yeah, you know what? The game was really good, and this is not so good. I'm sure there are some games where the DLC is like stellar. I've heard a lot of good about Minerva's Den for Bioshock 2. I've never played it, but people seem to think, wow, that really improved the game as a whole. So I have no doubt that that exists. In Assassin's Creed 2's case, it really doesn't seem like that was the case at all.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot of experience with DLC on single-player games, but in the multiplayer world, I think it makes a lot more sense just from the standpoint of this game is going to be out for 4 years, and this is a way that they can, A, keep making money off of the same game, and B, letting people like rediscover that same game 3 years after it came out.
Right, but we're talking about paid DLC, though, and I'm thinking that perhaps paid DLC doesn't really do the second thing that you said, make people rediscover a game.
You don't think so?
For a while. Well, do you actually, I don't know, have you ever gone back to a game after you heard, oh, I can buy this new map? Because it seems to me like the buy part is a big a barrier to getting back into the game.
Well, for me, I have like four friends that maybe not anymore, but you know, we regularly play like Halo Reach multiplayer, and even though that's still something we always come back to, whenever a new like map pack comes out, the number of people that are on Xbox Live playing it, like, because you can always see how many people are online in each playlist, it skyrockets every time new map packs come out. So I don't know. I was always under the impression that, you know, people get excited about that kind of stuff.
Okay. Fair enough. I was thinking more that maybe the way Valve does it with their free DLC that was a little bit more popular because, yeah, like I don't think it would occur to me that I could go back to a game because I, you know, for the opportunity to pay to play some new stuff,
Or
I
what they did, I think, with Halo 3 with some map packs where they would cost money when they come out, and then by the time the next map pack comes out, that one would become the free one.
Oh.
So it was almost like a timed like release, I guess, like with paying for it.
Yeah, and those who absolutely can't wait and are diehard fans can just play them first and learn them first and
Right. And then noobs can get on them and then not know the maps at all, and then they get killed. And then people get frustrated.
Yeah, that's a good way to make money and maybe a poor way to discover a game. I really don't know. And I'm really curious to see what Nintendo does because, like it took Nintendo so long. They're still figuring out how to do online right, and they're just now starting to do downloadable content. I know they've said that they wanted to make it a good value proposition to people, and that they didn't want to be, nickel and diming their fan base. But it's kind of hard to imagine that they won't. Like I think Fire Emblem, and what I see is, like, what do you guys think they're gonna do? Like, sell us new characters, new maps? Like, do we even care about new map?
You know what I think? I think back to Fire Emblem, the first one that ever came to North America. Which one was that? It was for the Game Boy Advance. It had Lindis. That one, it started off, your training was with Lindis, right? And then it went into the main campaign after that. And I think that for Fire Emblem, it's going to be just brand new, like little mini campaigns. And that's what, like, I actually 100% feel that that's what that's going to
Well,
be.
that game also had a separate, like, hard mode. It was like Hector mode.
Yeah, with Hector. Yeah, that's right.
I never played it, but I guess it you go through that same campaign in like a different perspective, or.
Which, it could be that as well, but I do feel that Fire Emblem
Yeah,
was
sorry.
interesting because, when you were training, you weren't even training with the actual story, or at least the main story. It was like, oh, okay, here's a character you're not actually going to be worrying about in, a couple hours, but, here's your training. And I feel that, like, I do think that they're going to be throwing in maybe a hard mode, but they will throw in, a mode that's, a smaller kind of battle that takes place between this and this in the main story.
Maybe it expands on one of the minor
Yeah,
characters and
exactly.
stuff
Kind
like
of
that.
what Guillaume was kind of touching upon. Oh, here's some extra stuff that breaks the pacing, but it's fun. Yeah, that's what I think Fire
If
Emblem's going to bring us.
the price sounds reasonable for that kind of stuff, like I'm all for that kind of stuff, as long as, I don't feel like I'm getting screwed or it feels like content that should have been in the game to begin with.
Yeah, and I wanted to touch upon that because you mentioned maybe it's a hard mode with a different perspective, but as soon as you introduce DLC that is the exact same thing that we used to get for free before,
Right.
people just feel gypped, you know?
Like the Batman Arkham City skins pack,
Oh,
where
God.
oh,
Well.
you actually have to pay money to play as Batman in different costumes.
And it's all the like the different Batman style costumes, which is neat, and I can see a lot of people probably paid for it, but that's ridiculous.
That's bad. And I think the separate, like the Robin pack is like $6 to play as
It is
Robin.
$6.99, I think. Yeah.
And it's a separate $6.99 or $6 to play as Nightwing.
Yeah, because those packs actually just came to the computer version, the PC version, and I looked through all of the DLC today, oddly enough, and
That's
went, "Well, I'm not buying any of that."
a quarter of the price of the actual game.
That's right, because at Valve, as we know, throwing in Valve, and you talked about Valve, no, not Valve, Steam.
Right.
Valve's DLC is always free, at least so far, and I admire them so much for that. They've given us a lot for free. But on Steam, we got this game for possibly really, really cheap because, Steam has these big sales, And then all of a sudden the DLC comes out and it's the same price as what you got the game for, right?
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
No, it doesn't. And I looked at it today and I went, okay, well, that's nice. I've already experienced that game and I'm ready to move on.
Yeah, no, it's true that, it's kind of pointless because we know that Nintendo was not going to do sales.
Well, okay, I'm going to jump in for 1 second. I really feel that Nintendo will do something different because they always do. And a lot of times it's something that upsets us and we just have to deal with it. But other times it's something that's really, really, not to put it in a cheesy way, magical. Nintendo is an odd duck. And that's why we are, you know, we have Negative World and we're a bunch of people who really enjoy Nintendo stuff. They do something that's a little different from everybody else and we enjoy it. And I have a feeling that they're DLC might even be different from what I said. It might be something that we really won't expect.
Won't see coming. Yeah.
Exactly.
So, like, let's move on to the next part of this topic. A lot of times, actually, the reason why I decided to do this topic was because I had just read about the new special edition for Mortal Kombat that has been announced. Basically, it's the game that was released sometime in this past year, but with all the DLC characters included, I think those characters were like $5 a pop or something. Like it was something outrageous. But now you can buy the full game and all the characters for, you know, probably between $40 and $60. I'm not sure. I don't think they announced the price. And not only that, but you get like the downloadable soundtrack and the downloadable movie, the first one. And you're just like, wow, look at all this content. And what do you mean? I get the whole movie that I have rose-colored glasses memories of? That's just awesome. And I don't know about you, but I tend to fall sometimes for these special editions. But then it turns out that this DLC that I didn't really want anyway, like it doesn't really add anything for me because I'm going to spoil a little bit of what I'm going to say in Paul's topic later, but I don't always finish games. So what is the point of getting an extra scenario at the end for the, you know, like not pay for it when you're never going to get to it, you know?
DLC, back when Blockbuster still existed, I went to Blockbuster and I purchased Little Big Planet for the PlayStation 3. And I was about to buy it, and the guy at the counter, who was a great guy because he mentioned this, said, well, the Game of the Year edition's the same price, and if you go to another Blockbuster, you can get it for the same price, and I'll tell you where to go. And I went out of my way. I drove another 20 minutes or so to go to another Blockbuster to buy the Game of the Year edition used, and I never even touched upon that content at all. My wife and I played... yeah, seriously. My wife and I played, you know, maybe a few hours worth of the main game, and I touched on the creation process, but when it comes to all the stuff that I got extra on the Game of Year edition, I wouldn't even know about it. So I went out of my way, I drove for 20 minutes just to get this game, and I don't even know what I got from it.
Anyway, I think we're going to get back to this later, but I feel that perhaps gamers are a little bit too hung up on content, like the amounts of content that they get from a game. And I can understand, like, you pay $60 or $50, or sometimes you might even be smart and wait until the game comes down in price, but you still want that bang for your buck. And that bang for your buck is a 60-hour quest or, you know, like, 50 playable characters in Mortal Kombat or something crazy like that. And Mortal Kombat, you're going to master one character or two if you're good. But you're going to try the other ones and, yeah, you're not going to go back to them again. So I don't know. Like we seem to be asking for the developers to create this filler. And then, we buy into it and then we don't really... I don't know. Maybe some people touch it, but I don't really.
Well, I recently got Mass Effect 2. It was $10 downloadable, and it was the digital deluxe version of the game. And it got me, was it the soundtrack? You got behind-the-scenes footage. You start off with like a different shotgun or something like that, and like you get a couple other different weapons and armor or whatever. And I mean, that was cool to have. I probably would have gotten the game anyway just because it was really cheap. But I mean, it was a nice little bonus. I don't think it really affected my purchase of the game. So right. I don't. Sometimes I wonder like who they're gearing those releases towards.
But have you ever held back on a game because you were certain that the there would be DLC and there would be a Game of the Year edition, and you just didn't want to bother with getting the quote unquote unfinished game, the unfinished version?
I personally haven't because I generally purchase games that I really want to play. And if I really want to play it, you know, I'll get it within the first little while. Not maybe not the first day, but you know, if I really want to play Game X, I will get Game X. And if there will be DLC down the road, you know, so be it.
It's especially tough with any multiplayer game too, because when a multiplayer game comes out these days, you kind of want to get it sooner rather than later, because that's when everyone's playing it.
Right.
And you know, I don't want to wait a year for like three new maps in a multiplayer game just because it'll all be on the same disc or something when no one's playing it anymore.
What I find is that all this DLC and then the inevitable special edition that comes later, I will wait for the special edition and then I will never ever get any version of the game. So I don't know if there are that many people who do what I do, but I feel like perhaps these publishers are screwing themselves out of a couple of sales anyway by trying to sell gamers the same game twice.
Yeah, I'm kind of actively boycotting the Batman DLC right now just because of how poorly I think they handled it. Because first of all, you know, they had all of the store-specific DLC for the console versions where it's like, oh, if you get it from GameStop, then you get Robin, or if you get it from Best Buy, you get Robin. And it's like, you can't get the game without, like, being, you know, gypped on other content. And then they release the content for sale, and it's just so expensive. And it's like, you wonder why people pirate things sometimes. That's why, because in, you know, in Arkham Asylum, I think people just went into the files of the game and just swapped out, like, character textures, and that's how you put different suits on Batman, and it seemed kind of cool, but now you have to pay $7 for the same thing.
Now, I want to throw in kind of a different kind of thing. Going to Valve, and I hope we keep this in. The way that they do it is they promise DLC that's free. The moment that the game becomes, you know, available, oh, by the way, there will be DLC, and you can get it when it comes out.
But Nintendo, yeah, Nintendo has been doing that, though, like with Picross, with...
and that's a very similar way. Like, for example, we had Picross. I don't know if Pushmo's doing it. But that would be.
They might be. I think you can scan QR codes from the developer's website.
Yeah, which is awesome, and that's the way to do it. And Valve and Nintendo, in a way, are kind of similar in that way. Like when Portal 2 came out, they went, "Oh, by the way, you know, when you finish the co-op game, you will get another co-op game, which is with an entirely different story." And you know what? To tell you the truth, the extra co-op in Portal 2 is worth money, and they didn't even ask for any. And that's good. And Nintendo generally is a similar company. So when it comes to paying for extra stuff in Fire Emblem, I'm expecting to be surprised.
Mm. I think Nintendo's done a good job, like, looking at Mario Kart Wii, where they can extend the life of the game by doing online tournaments and that kind of stuff. And I like that kind of approach to, you know, adding more content as the years go on.
Personally, my only hope is that the DLC doesn't turn out to be boring. Like, that it doesn't turn out to be just like, oh, okay, here's a skin or here's a new character that doesn't really fit in the story, but you're going to pay for it anyway.
Poochie.
Because you want the... sure. Because you want the full game or something like that. The truth is, I've never finished a Fire Emblem game, so... If it's not up to par, if it's not something interesting, I'm not gonna download it. And it's not just because it's from Nintendo that I'm gonna pay extra for the privilege to get something.
I agree.
You can buy some.
Despite the rumors.
Sorry, you can buy some new bed sheets for an Animal Crossing game.
Holy crap! Please take my credit card.
Recently, I've been thinking about the length of games, and a lot of times I'll read a review, and I haven't read a lot of reviews, to tell you the truth, recently, but when I read reviews, I notice that the length of a game is thrown in there for the number score. Oh, this game is only 2 hours long, so it gets, 4 points taken off of it. But truthfully, shorter games have their place, and I've been, especially at this point in my life, I have a lot of responsibilities. I've been enjoying these shorter games, and my perfect example is Limbo, which was mentioned earlier by Guillaume. Limbo is a game that lasted me a little over 3 hours, and the thing about that game is it never got monotonous. It never overstayed its welcome to me. It always threw in some extra challenge, some extra mode, some extra thing that I needed to do. It kept ramping up the challenge and giving me new things to do that it stayed very interesting, that I stayed with it in one sitting. I sat down, started it up, I got it on my PC, and I played it with my Xbox controller. And I sat down and I beat it in one sitting. So that was great. It kept throwing new things at me, and then it was done, and I went, great. I played a great experience. And that's how I felt about that.
I'm still not done with the game, so I did not have the one sitting experience, but the second time I sit with it, I'm probably going to finish it. I get the feeling I got pretty far into the game. But yeah, like short games, they definitely have their place. I mean, I keep hearing, and you're not the only one, like I'm pretty sure that gamers are just getting older in general, and when you get older, you got more stuff to worry about. You can't just sit for like in your pajamas for a whole morning and play through a game. It's just, yeah, like well, maybe you can, but there's probably something else you should be doing.
Some people are lucky if they even can get out to a movie like once a month or something like that.
Oh yeah, definitely. So. I'm not sure. Like you mentioned, that was reviewers who throw the length of game in there as some sort of bullet point. But I think that gamers kind of demand it, though, and I'm not sure if they know what they're demanding because you keep hearing that a lot of gamers don't finish the games that they start. So why are they asking for a 50-hour quest? Why is a game that's like 8 hours is not like, why is that not worth $60? If it's like the best 8 hours of your life, like what does it matter if it's, like 60 and not $30?
Do you think that's more of a mentality of a younger gamer?
Maybe. I don't know. Like I don't want to cast judgments. I mean, we all have our different budgets, and I don't have that many responsibilities, so I can afford to spend frivolously on expensive discs, I suppose. But so I can't put the blame on anyone, but it feels to me like not a whole lot of the people who say, well, okay, I'm going to pass on this game for $60 because eight hours is not worth it for me. It seems to me that a lot of the people who say that don't necessarily finish a 30-hour game. So
well, For me personally, I mean, I remember when I was, I forget how old I was, but when Star Fox 64 came out, I remember being like really excited for that game, and that was an expensive game back then, because it had the Rumble Pack, and it was still, you know, the cartridge-based game.
Oh, but hey, no load times.
No load times, that's right. But anyway, I remember getting Star Fox 60, because I used to watch the Nintendo Power video, because they hyped that game so much back then, and I was so excited for it, and then it came out, and I brought it home, and I think we wound up beating it in, you know, a couple of hours, or, you know, because it's not a very long game at all, and then you get to the end, and you're like, well, that's it? But, I mean, then, you know, you kind of realize that you can take different branches through the game, and I wound up going back into it for, like, high scores and all that kind of stuff. But just as a kid, I wanted that experience to be longer than it was. So I don't know if it's, like, nowadays, you know, I just recently played through most of the game Jamestown, which is... an indie game on PC, which is basically a, you know, shoot 'em up, like, kind of like Ikaruga, and that's a pretty short game too. But, you know, I don't care that's really short. You know, I had a lot of fun with it. So,
But you say that back as a kid, you wished the game was longer, even once you had discovered that there were different paths and stuff.
I don't know. Well, when I was younger, I think I was raised on games being like Super Mario Brothers, where your goal is to get from the beginning to the end, and you want to beat the game, and that's it. And once you've beaten the game, then you're done with it. But that was more of a, like, a non-linear play it multiple times and get a different experience out of it every time. So I think I still wasn't as familiar with that kind of a game when I was younger. If that makes any sense?
Yeah, I suppose so. It feels to me that Star Fox 64 probably... I don't know, I feel like it's exactly the right length for the type of game it is.
I feel that way now.
Like, imagine if it was, like, the exact same game, except that you went through all the levels in linear order. So instead of being able to go through the game in, what, like, 40 minutes, it took you an hour and 40 minutes. Is that really the kind of experience that we want? Because... at the end of the day, you know, like over an hour of shooting stuff in space is perhaps a little bit much, you know, for like an arcade space shooter.
If you could save the game, maybe I wouldn't have minded doing something like that, but I don't think you could save your progress in that game, could you?
No.
Not at the time, no. But on the remake on the 3DS, you can.
Okay.
But not only that, but also you're asked to perfect certain levels to get medals.
Right.
Oh, yes. And
yeah, that if the game were linear, maybe if they allowed you to select your level, but that kind of goes against the spirit of the game, I think.
I think it's very cool, like, talking about that game is a pretty brilliant thing is just putting the map in there. When you go from one level to the next, you don't know for sure. It doesn't tell you, like games nowadays, if you do something different in this level, you might find a different level and find a different path. No, here's the map, and you have to go, oh, wait a second, I didn't go to, like, you know, 8 million of these other levels. There has to be a way of going through it in a different way. And I find, but of course, I think that's more of a Nintendo thing, where, you know, that's just how they do it. I'm very impressed with that.
I think, like, in retrospect, that's an example of a really well-done game that's, like, short, but because there are different ways you can play through it, and the replayability of it is there, that there is still a lot of value in it for me.
Right. And it's kind of built in.
Yeah.
But it's not unlike how old Nintendo games were. I mean, like, you say that you were raised more, like, with the mentality that once you beat a game, you were done with it. But I think that most kids basically had two games a year, one for Christmas and one for their birthday.
Absolutely.
And that was my case anyway. And basically, so I had like a 5-month and a 7-month period where I was playing the same game over and over again.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm not trying to say that, you know, I wouldn't replay Super Mario Brothers 3, and then every time you play through, you wind up playing through different levels and stuff. That game.
Well, you don't have to make apologies.
No,
it's okay. You were a rich kid who had like all the games you wanted.
Everything yeah. ever. But even if you were a rich kid back then, you still didn't have nearly as many choices as we do nowadays. Not even close.
Choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a confession to make. I'm not sure if I've said this on the podcast before, but like collections, I'm pretty ambivalent about them because, for instance, the Sonic's Ultimate Genesis collection, you've got, what, like 40 Genesis games on there? I'm probably not the only one who's played maybe like half an hour of each and every one of the games that's on there and never really went back to it. And now, like, we've got all these downloadable game services. You can get a short game for really, really cheap. And new releases keep coming every week. And I gotta say, even though, like, Limbo is 3 hours long or whatever, I still am not done with it. And I really should finish it before the next batch of Nintendo eShop releases and PSN games start coming in, because I'm probably going to be like, ooh, shiny new games. Maybe I should download these, and I'm not going to touch Limbo again. Even if the game is like 3 hours long, it's like there's so much choice that it's overwhelming, and you just want to move on to the next new thing.
Well, for me, the beauty of that was, you know, if I know that VVVVV is 2 hours long, like, I kind of put aside other games I was playing at the time just because I knew I could beat that in a night. Or,
right.
you know, I could sit down and accomplish, beat that game. You know, I didn't have to, I'm not chipping away at a much longer experience. I'm just going to, you know, I think I'll just, I'll play Limbo tonight. And that's what I'll do for that night. And then it worked out really well. And I beat it. So, I don't know. It was kind of comforting to just, you know, make that night, you know, for that game.
You know what? That's a really good thing to say, because I felt the same way. I think I was in the middle of, not even in the middle, I was at the beginning of Skyrim, and I was running around, you know, tackling different caves and stuff in Skyrim. And finally Zelda came out, and of course that was the game I've been anticipating. And my brother-in-law says, so how are you doing in Skyrim? I said, well, you know what? Right now, Zelda is the game that I'm going to be focusing on. And I know this is a bigger game, of course. This game did cost me 46 hours or so. But in the same way, I said, you know what? Right now, I'm going to focus on Zelda, and then I'll go back to Skyrim, you know, when I do. But right now, it's Zelda time. But my problem was, I eventually beat Zelda, and then because Skyrim's such a big game, and, you know, there's the whole story to deal with, et cetera, et cetera, I went, I haven't even gone back to it yet. I went, oh, I'll play Limbo. Limbo's my tonight game. Oh, wait, no, VVVVVV is my tonight game. So, you know, that's, so this sort of kind of fits into both of your arguments, to tell you the truth. You know, there's so many games, and all of a sudden, you know, I have these games to play, and these are my experience for tonight, quote unquote. Right?
It kind of reminded me of when I was a kid, and you'd rent a game. And, you know, when you rent a game, that's the game that you play for that week, basically. And it almost makes getting that game an event.
That's true. I remember one time.
That's what some of these smaller games feel like to me.
But going back to your point about, Guillaume, your point about compilations. I got the Sly Cooper compilation for the PS3. And you know how much of that I played? About 3/4 of the first game, and that was it. So yeah, I agree with you. You have, when you have so much choice, you just keep going to your other choices, and maybe you never go back to anything else. I went, oh wow, this is, you know, 3 Sly Cooper games. I played 3/4 of it. Something came out that really caught my fancy, and that was it. I didn't even go back to finish part one.
At this point, like, there's so much. Yeah, I've always like prided myself on like trying different genres, different things. I always like the fact that there's a lot of variety, especially like since the PlayStation generation. It seems like more types of games came out, and whole genres had time to rise and fall, like the music genre or you know, things like that. But at this point, there is so much that they're offering us that I basically just focus on the one type of game that I like most. I feel like this past 4 months, I only played 2D platformers. And you can probably like listen to the podcast and realize that, yeah, I'm not lying. Like, that's basically all I've been playing.
Well, you know what, Guillaume? Those are the best games out there.
Yeah, like, what do you, when you have so many that are being offered to you, there's really no compulsion to go outside of your comfort zone, especially since these 2D platformers usually are just the right length that you can just like comfortably finish one in perhaps a week and then move on to the next. And that makes the epics that are like 200 hours long not really that enticing to me.
Can you guys think of any games that you felt were too short? Like, when is a game too short? Because to me, sometimes you might get a game that it feels like it doesn't, maybe the mechanics of it don't develop to where you think they need to develop to, and then the game kind of feels like it should have been longer.
Can I go back in time a little bit? Or maybe a, sure. maybe a lot? the game that I felt was too short, and this is going back quite a bit, and I know that there's a certain way you're supposed to play it, but they never advertised it this way, was Yoshi's Story.
Oh.
Yeah, that was a game that you can beat in, I don't know how many minutes, but you can beat it really fast, get the entire ending, and that was it. And that's why it was so disappointing. I mean, there's a way of, you know, going through it and getting all the melons, but that's a game that I don't think it quite found its place.
See, I think the problem with a lot of games is that they pretty much are short games, and then the games are made into longer games by adding padding or things that
exactly.
just
and,
don't
yeah,
make the game any fun.
That's I agree very much with that, and that's part of my argument with why short games generally are a stronger experience.
Like, I love Skyward Sword, but I think that game was probably a little too long. I think there's some editing they could have done. Or like, you look at the end of Metroid Prime, which is another game I love, where I don't know if there... I think you had to, like, collect things at the end of it. Yeah, a lot of games will do that, where it's like, all right, it's time to go beat the... Oh, wait, no, you have to go do all of this. And that's a point where people just stop playing a game.
Final Fantasy games are terrible at this. The new ones, anyway. Like, I never finished Final Fantasy X, even though I got to like the outer shell of the main boss, because
so close to the ending.
Ah, seriously, really, really close. But you know what? Like, it was asking me to go back to all sorts of areas, like. That game was extremely linear. You couldn't really deviate from a path. And at some point, it asks you, well, okay, go find some stuff. You can now go wherever you want. But I didn't really want to do that, because at that point in the story, the characters were ready to take on a big baddie. And I was ready, too. Like, I had been playing that game for 40 hours. But I just wasn't leveled up enough to really damage that outer shell. And I was just like, do I really want to, you know, go explore and do all that of that stuff? I feel like I've earned the right to finish this damn game already.
Yeah.
So what I did was just like, I looked up the ending on the internet. I didn't want to put up with that shit. Like, I played your game for 40 hours. Don't make me, you know, just play your filler, because I won't do it.
Yeah,
I refuse.
That's the beauty of a game like Chrono Trigger.
Ah, you can skip an entire, like, dungeon. You can just smash into Lavos and lose your ship, but like, yeah, like
the,
you don't have
the
to
game
deal
is
with
over
ship.
When you want it to be over. I mean, with an exception, just because, you know, you're not always powerful enough to beat the game. But you know, that game is as long as it needs to be, basically. You know, that's a game that's not 2 to 3 hours, but it's paced well for the length that it is, and
for
you know,
sure
you can have a 20 to 30 hour game that feels way too long, or you can have a 3 hour game that feels a little too short. So I think pacing is just a really big factor in all of this. So, it is 2012. 2011, we saw The Legend of Zelda's 25th anniversary. The year before that, we saw Mario's 25th anniversary. And now, it is Mega Man's turn. The Blue Bomber will be turning 25 this year, and as of now, I have not seen any official word that Capcom is doing anything special, like any sort of compilation. So, do you guys like Mega Man at all? I know Paul does.
I do.
How about you, Guillaume? Are you down with the Mega Man?
I'm pretty sure I played through all the games through an emulator at some point, and I eventually got like the collection. And I don't think I went through all the games legitimately yet. And for some weird reason, I think the first game is my favorite. And I know that's not a very popular answer.
I've never given the first game enough time, but I'm a big fan of 2 and 3. And
a lot of people are.
I've been playing 3 a little bit, actually. I just bought it on Virtual Console. And so I'm having fun with that, and had fun with 9 and 10. I think I'm one of the few people who really enjoyed Mega Man 7. I don't know about you guys there, Super Nintendo.
It's been a while. I feel like, yeah, I have the same complaints that a lot of people have about it. The
gigantic sprites.
Yeah, and the fact that it's a little bit harder to tell when you're... you know, it's harder to be pixel perfect when the pixels are smaller.
Yeah.
I'll say it like that way. The fact that Mega Man has looked the same in 8 bits for so long, you know, it kind of creates certain expectations. Like, it's as if how he looks is tied to how he plays.
It kind of is. I mean, his sprite looks so deformed compared to what his actual art looks like, because he's kind of boxy, but that, you know, that affects gameplay in a big way, I think. How about you, Paul?
Mega Man 3 is my favorite. Mega Man 3 is actually the first one that I actually owned myself. I used to rent Mega Man 2 constantly. There was a point where I played through Mega Man 1, and I played the entire thing, but the thing about Mega Man 1, at least to me, and I know, Guillaume, that's your favorite, the thing about Mega Man 1 is that it's kind of like Super Mario Bros. 2 Japan to me. It was the first game in its series, but it's really, really tough.
Is it that hard?
I find it pretty tough.
Hmm.
Maybe it's because my first exposure to Mega Man was actually the Game Boy games, but I didn't find it that hard. Like I would say that the first Game Boy game is a little bit harder because the sprite is so big and the enemies are so impossible to avoid that, I don't know, maybe it prepared me
that
a bit.
That was my first original classic Mega Man, was the Game Boy one. Because I had actually been exposed to Mega Man X before I played the original Mega Man, which is a little backwards, but...
Did we just blow Paul's mind?
You did not blow my mind. Actually, well, yeah, in a sense you did. Because one of the first Mega Man games that I had was the Game Boy Part 1 as well. And that game is probably, for me, the hardest Mega Man. And I agree. Because I remember playing that through that over and over and over again when I was a kid. And eventually I beat it. And I don't even know if I could beat it now. Because I haven't played it.
Especially hard on... the old Game Boy, which you could hardly even see anything on, and you're
expected
to play through the hardest Mega Man game.
Yeah, you had your all the motion blur that the old Game Boy gave us, and it was just... I do agree, Mega Man 1 for the Game Boy is probably the hardest Mega Man, but Mega Man 3 for me is the Mega Man to beat. I don't feel that the slide ability ruined Mega Man, and I think that that's kind of... you know, the creator's thoughts, at least at the time, back when Mega Man 9 came out, that the slide ability was where Mega Man started sliding downhill. But I feel that Mega Man 4 was the point where, you know, once we got the Buster shot, you know, with the charging Buster, we always were holding the B button down, and Mega Man was always going... I think that's about where Mega Man started kind of falling apart. even though I enjoyed Part 4, but not nearly as much as Part 3. And I actually enjoyed Part 2 more than Part 4 as well.
What sucks about that is that on the NES they had like 4 sound channels they could use, and Mega Man music was always like, to me, like the best music on the system, usually.
Agreed.
And then you give Mega Man an ability that completely like mutes most of the music out, and you're like, wait,
yep.
That's not fair. So, you know, I haven't seen anything, you know, I did a quick Google search and couldn't find anything about, you know, Capcom releasing any sort of compilation or special 25th anniversary.
They're going to be celebrating by releasing a new Mega Man Legends game, right?
Hopefully. I know that game
yeah.
has fans. I'm not one of them, but
well, don't worry, cuz it's not actually coming out.
Yeah, no, they canceled it a while ago.
If they did cuz they just did the, you know, the classic collection on GameCube, but I guess this generation hasn't had a compilation. Like what to you guys? Are you guys are you a fan of these like 25th anniversary game compilations, or do you think that it's
this is my thing, and it's connected again to something that happened in my life. I came to Windsor for the first, well, not for the first time, but to work in Windsor, and I didn't know anybody around here, and the only thing I had for me was my 25th or not 25th, but my Mega Man anniversary compilation to keep me company, and I played through that thing like crazy. And I feel that something like Mega Man, which is a game that once again kind of fits our short style game, I mean, it's challenging, but you can beat the game in you know, a short amount of time. I feel that Mega Man's just really well done that way, that I was even able to get through Mega Man 8, which is probably my least favorite Mega Man game ever created.
Yeah.
It's horrible. I'm sorry. That game, like, you have that soccer ball that you kick around. It's weird. That game, the Mega Man compilation is great. As a fan of Mega Man, it's wonderful. Like, I'm not sure 100% if someone nowadays who hasn't played the games before wouldn't get as much out of it as maybe we did. But I know that, like, I destroyed every possible thing in that game. Like, I did everything I could. Even though after Mega Man 4, I still don't 100% remember the games too well. Because Mega Man 1, 2, 3 are the ones that I remember the best. But I'm going to tell you, the thing that I'm really upset about, even to this day, is the fact that they never released the Game Boy compilation that they were supposed to release years ago.
I remember that.
I think most of my exposure in Mega Man has been through, well, like when it wasn't the Game Boy games, the NES games were definitely through the compilation. And the problem is, and that's been well documented, but I picked the GameCube version of the compilation, and the controls are reversed. Instead of, you know, they reversed the A and B buttons, and the button that's supposed to shoot jumps, and the button that's supposed to jump shoots. That I don't know, some people say, no, you can get used to it, but I don't think that's true in my case. I can't get used to it. It's not optimized for my joint and the tip of my thumb.
That's the only reason I purchased the PlayStation 2 version. The only reason.
I should have done that.
Because it plays exactly the same way as the NES version. You know, the one, you know, the joint of your thumb is your A button, and the tip of your thumb is your B button.
Yeah, you play it the exact same way I do. Yeah, when how long you hold the jump buttons determines the height of your jump, and when you have to constantly shoot because there's enemies that are not going to wait until you land before they start attacking you. So you need to do both those actions at the same time. So it's very important to have the thumb exactly at the right spot to be able to hit, you know, to hold down one of the buttons and to keep tapping the other one. It's hard to describe, but I mean, once you've learned how to play like that, you can't just unlearn it, or at least I can't. But
well, no, I mean, you train your thumbs to recognize one button as like your primary button, and the other is like a secondary button, and that just becomes, you know, muscle memory.
Yeah, basically. So I did manage to play through a lot of the games, but I only played through it once because it wasn't really that good an experience. I feel like I should probably go and, you know, get some of those games on WiiWare, and probably I would have a better time with them. But the thing is, since I discovered them kind of recently and at a time in my life where, as we said, you know, we don't really have time to finish games, much less replay them, that means that a lot of the Mega Man games in my mind just are blurred. Yeah, I recall which bosses are in the first Mega Man, but after that, you couldn't name me one, and I wouldn't really know, you know, I couldn't tell you the number.
Yeah, the games start to feel a little bit more expendable as the series goes on, like forgettable, I mean.
So really, what I get out of this is that for the 20th anniversary, Mega Man got a really bad compilation, and Capcom could make, you know, really good money by re-releasing an actual competent compilation, and they're still not taking that opportunity. It's really weird.
There's a lot of year left to go, so there's plenty of time for them to release compilation. They could do something on Xbox Live and PSN. That's what I have a feeling they'll do. But
I guess so. But if like they shouldn't wait for like the 30th anniversary, because by then we'll all be they're gonna have to sell like each game for 33 cents on the iPad 6, and no one is gonna like that. So
well, the reason I kind of lean towards them doing a downloadable compilation, kind of like the, because I think wasn't the Sega Genesis collection, was that a downloadable game or was that a disc game?
That was a disc, but a lot of them are making their way to download in download form.
To me, that seems more logical, just because that would carry over. They wouldn't have to release a new anniversary every 5 years. I mean, that would be there for them. I don't know.
That would be good for us, but maybe Capcom thinks it wouldn't be
them. Yeah, well, I don't know if they're going to see a market in people buying a disc copy of it. They kind of set the, you know, the standard now that Mega Man 9 and 10 were both downloadable, so
now that I think about it, you can get Mega Man 1 through 3 on the on PSN. I can't remember, like, I think it's some sort of Japan-only version.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's part of their PSN imports.
Well then, maybe they'll release a new Mega Man game this year, and that will be their 25th anniversary.
I'm going to say, I don't know if I want them really to do that. Because when Mega Man 10 came out, I think it came out, what, a year after Mega Man 9? And then at that point,
I think it was like 2 years, wasn't it?
Was it really? Well, at least at that point, I wasn't 100% like excited for it. When Mega Man 9 came out, I was like, oh, sweet, a brand new Mega Man in the style of the NES game, sweet. And I'm going to tell you right now that Mega Man is one of those characters that I would definitely buy a CD or an actual game disc worth of content for. Like, we have Mario, Zelda. Mega Man's like my third-party guy who I would go to and I would actually purchase, like, you know, if they made a 25th anniversary disc for, I would be all over it.
Now, see, what I want them to do is I want a new Mega Man game, but I want it to actually feel new and not just, you know, make it look 8-bit or whatever. My dream Mega Man game after playing Super Mario 3D Land would be to have a game that's almost like that, but with Mega Man, where it's still like a very linear game, but you're still running around and jumping and shooting and all that kind of stuff. Because I don't think Mega Man ever got his just due, his just desserts, or whatever you want to call it.
And
in 3D.
We're talking about Mega Man, right? Not Mega Man, you know, Legends, or even Mega Man X in 3D, but like,
well, I
Mega
don't,
Man.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Mario got translated into 3D with Mario 64, and Galaxy, and Zelda went to 3D, but I don't think, like, when Mega Man went to 3D, he didn't really retain what made those original games so great.
I agree.
If they make a new Mega Man game, do you guys just want to see them do the same thing because, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it? Or do you actually want to see them genuinely try to do something new with it, even at the risk of pissing off, you know, like, really hardcore Mega Man fans?
Well, just because a game is 2D and in the old style doesn't mean that they can't try new things. And, correct me if I'm wrong, but the Galaxy Man stage in Mega Man 9 was pretty, you know, like, it was a pretty interesting idea that we hadn't seen before. Like, it's got portals, right? Is that Galaxy Man or something else?
That was Galaxy Man. It has, like, these weird, you jump into them and you kind of fly out of them. So, yeah, it has portals, in a sense.
But, I mean, even though that has new ideas, isn't that still kind of just introducing tweaks and modifications into that old, like, Mega Man paradigm?
But that, I would think that would be the perfect way to go, no? Because that's kind of what Nintendo does. New Super Mario Bros. Wii, I mean, it plays like Mario, and there's not really any, you know, revolution in that game. But the first time that you're playing in a dark cave and all you see is the path that's being lit up by the fire that you're shooting out, you realize, oh, okay, this game is trying some new stuff. And, you know, it's a nice touch and it's just one level, but, I mean, it's just enough to make you think, okay, so they have been thinking of clever things to do with the old Mario formula.
Yeah, I mean, no? I guess what I kind of want to see deep down is, you know, because I love that old Mega Man formula, but I kind of want to see them branch out a little bit with it, just so that, you know, things, that new games aren't just, you know, like superficially new or it's like the same exact formula, but maybe you can look at New Super Mario Bros. Wii as a new Mario game, but that's also counterbalanced by the fact that they have, you know, Mario Galaxy and Galaxy 2 where they're doing all these, like, new things that they can't do in that same, you know, paradigm of a 2D side-scroller. Or Super Mario 3D Land, that was, like, bringing that old-school Mario gameplay, but into a whole new, I mean, literal dimension. And I think there's a longing in me to see, you know, that world brought to life in 3D, but still retain that shooting and jumping gameplay. Well, I guess, you know, what I mean to say is that I want to see that franchise move forward in a new direction in some way. I mean, I don't know. Even just seeing some new sprites and like a graphical update might be kind of cool.
Thing I think is that, at least back when they were actually making a ton of Mega Man games, which they're not doing anymore, is once they realized they were going into a brand new style of gameplay or something, they just created a brand new Mega Man. It's like, well, except Mega Man X is very similar to the original Mega Man, except, you know, the story, right? But once they went into... how many iterations of Mega Man do we have?
Well, there is the original. There's X. Do we count
Battle
Mega
Network.
Man Battle Network?
But, you know, when they come up with a new idea for Mega Man, it seemed like they would just create a new Mega Man universe. And that's too bad. I think the only time that we really saw an evolution of, you know, a natural evolution that, you know, most games went through was when we went from Mega Man 6 to Mega Man 7, and then 7 to 8. It's just too bad that those games weren't quite as strong as the older ones.
But again, it just goes back to, you know, my theory that how Mega Man plays is tied so closely to how he looks. I personally think that Mega Man 10 and 9 and 10 were the way to go, because that's what Mega Man looks like to me. And I don't necessarily think that it's a shame that they went with a different iteration of Mega Man every time they wanted to change a formula. I think it was probably smart because, you know, Mega Man X was cool, and like the new abilities that you could cling to walls and that you could you had secrets to find, like, that was unheard of in Mega Man before. So
yeah, I definitely agree. I think 9 and 10 were the way to go when they came out, but I don't know how much more they could keep doing that. Because, I mean, that's just... When I played Mario 3D Land, I mean, one of the first things that came to my mind was, like this is how you do, like, an action 3D game, you know, that's, you know, you're not worrying about camera, and it's, like, it really retained that old-school vibe, but it was in 3D, and, like, you never really thought about, you know, the camera, like, all that much. And it'd be cool to see if other franchises could use that influence to retain that retro style of gameplay in a new way. I don't know.
The thing is, like, I have no faith. Like, Inafune is not at Capcom anymore, and you know, I don't really have any faith that Mega Man could remain Mega Man, like that it could keep its soul without him. But even with him, there have been so many bastardizations of Mega Man.
Oh yeah, misfires.
That you kind of feel like perhaps he's been too out of, like, yeah, he didn't have his touch on those games, maybe, or I don't know what happened. Maybe he's like the George Lucas of the game developing world, and you know, all of a sudden, like, he doesn't understand what made his creation so good in the first place. It feels like perhaps Capcom doesn't understand what makes Mega Man good anymore. Into Creates understood enough to make Mega Man 9 and 10,
definitely.
But I don't think they're in the picture anymore. I don't know.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, because he needs some love, Capcom. Show him some love. Oh, and also, I just want to tease this really quick. So last year, some of you may remember me doing some art for a popular gaming website that will remain anonymous. And word on the street is that they might be doing a similar feature for Mega Man. So keep your ears open and your eyes also open.
Okay, thanks for listening to the Negative World Podcast. Please leave your comments. If you want to comment, you just have to come to the website at negativeworld.org and find the thread associated with this episode and leave your comments there. You have to register. You have to be a member. You can leave your comments on Facebook. To find a Facebook page, just search negativeworld.org. And you can also join us on Twitter at @negative_world. Please rate us on iTunes. That really helps us find new listeners. Thank you, Jamie and Paul, for being here with me.
Thank
You're
you.
You're very welcome.
Talking my ears off. And very fun, as always, to do this podcast. And thank you, everyone who listened. We probably wouldn't be doing this if there were only three of you. Thankfully, I think there's at least seven. So, thanks for listening.
Nice.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya. Sweet, so now the iPhone is good for the pizza place, and it's good for handheld games. Tons of handheld.
It is the premier gaming platform.
It has hardcore games such as Tiny Tower and Jetpack Joyride.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm just seething right now.
I know, that's why I'm saying it all.
And the checkpoints are pretty forgivable.
That's right.
Forgiving?
Forgiving, yes.
Yes, yeah. That's right.
They're forgivable as well.
I'll forgive them.
That'd be a really good idea.
You down with DLC? Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, you know me. That's cool. I mean, I remember back in the day, my dad once rented me Skate or Die, the first Skate or Die for NES. And I went home, and I played that whole thing the entire weekend, even though I didn't even want to. Because that's what I had, right? That's what I had to play. And he went, oh, here, I got this for you. And I went, well, my dad got this for me, and it's the only thing I have to play aside from games that I've already played before. So I played that, and I, like, perfected that game, even though I didn't even really want to play that game because I didn't like it so much.
Yeah, I used to have Back to the Future.
Oh, God. You don't even touch that. That's horrific.
I played the shit out of that game.
You poor soul.
That song is burned into my brain.
It's just the power of love.
So bad. But
I wish it was the power of love.
That was a game we had, so I played it a lot.
It did give us motion blur, right? I'm just kind of going into something.
Oh, yeah. Per pixel motion blur.
Yeah, I recall it. Like, I even remember back... Every time I play a game, I always remember something in my life that was happening. And there was one point where I was on an old couch that my parents owned, and a spring in the couch went right through my knee.
Oh.
And I was on Dr. Wily stage, like the first Dr. Wily stage. And I played that all the way through the hospital, all the way. Like, that's when I actually beat the game. I ended up beating it, like, waiting to see a doctor. Because we're here in Canada, and the wait times aren't 100% great. But they're free. They're free. So I actually beat the game for the first time, and I was so happy because after I beat it, I found out I didn't have to go to school the next day because I got a spring through my knee.
Anyway.
But wait, are you saying, Paul, that while one of your legs was disabled, you had like extra powers for your other limbs? Or
that
what?
Must have been it. My right leg just went limp, and all of a sudden my thumbs became super thumbs.
Your dexterity is just unbelievable. You're like Daredevil.
That's right.
Exactly.
But,
Yeah, like, he could shoot up, couldn't he?
I never played Legends. I mean, I watched a lot of footage of it, but, I mean, it was kind of like an action RPG, I guess.
I was kind of going for a joke, but we can take it seriously as well.
I can move my arm up.
Yeah, that's not Mega Man. Get that shit out of here.
I'm good.
Why we took over everything. We better watch out.